What you're about to hear is a little taste of Dead Pit on Patreon.com. We have thousands of hours of archival audio on the sites, in addition to weekly podcast exclusive shows. Tiers start at just $1. If you want to go up to be a baller and shot caller, where you call the shots, what we talk about, what we review, whatever else, you can do that as well. Hundreds of exclusive shows, over 100 fan commentaries, Eurocult podcasts, new and old, songs, the weekly midweek obliteration podcast, wrestling podcasts, and much, much more. Dead Pit on Patreon.com. If you like this show, go over there and check that out.
Broadcasting almost live from the Dead Pit Studios in beautiful downtown Prestonsburg, Kentucky. It's the MWO Podcast on Patreon, hosted by the Dead Pit Boys. Oh, shucky ducky, quack quack.
Howdy, folks. It's the Creepy Kentuckian here, and it's the January 26th edition of the Midweek Obliteration on Patreon. It finally happened. The man himself, Master Chaos TV, saved me plenty of money over the last few months on some movies.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm honored to be here. Absolutely. A big fan from way back, so this is very cool to hang out with you guys.
Well, we kind of do go way back because, and I was telling Uncle Bill about this too, 2007, I think?
Yeah.
2006, 2007. There was only, YouTube is way different than it is today, right?
Yeah.
Horror reviews and stuff like that. I swear to God, I remember it being the Dead Pit channel and your channel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there were a couple of other ones. But there was, I don't know if you produced this show, there was a horror review show.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Joe Bob Briggs style almost.
Yes, yeah, Woody and Jerry's, yeah.
Yeah.
I did that one. That was way back in the day. That was you're right. There weren't a lot of people covering these movies, or at least sort of like expounding on their releases and things like that.
I don't think anybody really knew what to make out of YouTube around that time, and the people that did ended up getting like a pretty good audience because you didn't have the kind of content you do now. Like, there's probably 500 people that do horror reviews and things like that now, like including us, but.
Well, the funny thing, I was just remembering back, and I searched through email because I don't delete anything. I searched through my Gmail account and can find stuff from way back, I think 2005 or whenever I first got the account. Wow. So the horror channel supplied us with a camera. Now, this was right when all the Dread Central guys left. Like, I don't know what year that was, probably 2007, 2008. And that's how we got into YouTube, really. We got this camera. We initially started recording stuff for the horror channel. And I think the horror channel is still up in some form. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe, but I checked it not too long ago. But yeah, that's kind of how we stumbled into it. And you were you based in Los Angeles around that time period too, or what was your story?
No, I was in Miami, Florida. Born and raised there, and I'm glad to not be there anymore. I'll say that. I'm now relocated to LA, but at the time I was in Miami. My buddies were there, and there wasn't a giant horror community there. But you know, online you found like people, and you connected with people, and podcasts were spreading, and people were listening to stuff, and you know, connections were happening. So yeah, out of Miami is where I did my initial forays into YouTube. But you know, it wasn't a thing where it didn't feel like something I could continue with it and find any kind of big success, or most people did it as a hobby or as an after work kind of thing. But my focus was making movies, and so I had to put my energy into doing that, and that's a lot of it's a lot. I mean, that's more than a 24-hour job, because you're always on call, especially if you're writing. So I just, you know, my energy was there for a little bit, and then I decided to, you know, flitter away until COVID hit, and then, hey, I got nothing better to do than talk on YouTube. So that's what brought me back.
That's pretty much
same for us. Yeah. Exactly the same. We were talking about a little bit before the show how different YouTube was initially than what it is now, because essentially now it's all filmmakers doing kind of their own. If they're not doing their movies, they're doing their own shows. Everything is slickly produced. And back in 2007, 2008, it was just more about, hey, here's a webcam. Let's talk about a movie for 10 minutes or whatever the limit was then. And I don't know. It was just, and the whole setup of YouTube as well was way different. Seems like now it's just more of a, you know, a money game for big studios.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you guys have this issue. Whenever I put up a review today, you know, for the Dead Heat 4K from Vinegar Syndrome, and literally the second it is uploaded, I got a copyright claim for using the damn trailer. I don't even use the audio of the trailer. Luckily, my channel isn't monetized because I ran into issues with YouTube. So I don't necessarily have to worry about re-editing stuff. But for people who do, that's a hassle, you know. And it's like, we're doing it to promote the movie, or at least promote the release. But YouTube is 100% not on our side, and that affects content creators, and it burns people out. You know, it's one of the unfortunate side effects of doing movie coverage. If you can't actually show the damn movie, then, you know, it's just a talking head, or you throw pictures and, you know, the audience gets bored and they don't tune in for the next episode. So it's a weird catch 22.
Not even just movies and things. There was a pretty popular story here recently where like an anime vlogger got sued by a Chinese or Japanese company or something like that, and they took down 125 of his videos, where all he was doing was like reviewing these toys and like movies and stuff like that, but he never showed like really anything other than the product itself. And like, that's how bad it got, you know. It's wow. Getting now, they're just like, they took down his whole, and he did monetize his stuff, they took down his whole collection of videos
at one time. I know that's an issue too with a lot of the playthrough video game videos too, like even old school stuff like Nintendo and Sega Genesis and all that. Like, they're trying to file claims on that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of gotten crazy at this point, like in terms of what they consider to be copyright and like what you can do and show and things. I mean, you basically can't show or any kind of audio or any kind of like video clips. Or
well, anything, I mean, but a lot of cases though, it's under fair use technically. I mean, you would think, but I mean, you can try to dispute it all day long.
Yeah,
it's, you know, they're never going to fix it.
No, you can dispute it. I've disputed it over and over and over, but it's, you know, if the other company says no, it still sticks, then what can you do? Take them to court, you know, for an unmonetized video, whatever. As long as they don't take my channel down, it's fine. But it affects other people who are trying to make a go at it and trying to provide, you know, unique content. It's hard. It's hard out there, but it's almost like it's becoming Hollywood. Hollywood is very much a cynical business entity, and they honestly don't care what the fans think. If they can make money, they can make money, and that's kind of where YouTube, I feel, is going to go. And I don't know what this is going to look like in a couple years, but for right now, whatever, we enjoy it as long as we can.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get back to YouTube in just a second, but one of the big things that I know that you're really proud of and is sort of a big deal is your movie is out in some theaters across the country, and it's on Vudu. It's probably on some other streaming services as well, but I saw it on Vudu the other night. Tell us a little bit about that and just your journey from Miami to Los Angeles.
Okay, that's a big question, the movie's called The Legend of La Llorona. It's based on the Mexican legend of La Llorona. This has been in production I should say in post, for quite some time. I'll tell you what, I started working on the script before the one produced by James Wan even shot. Because I was writing the script, and then they announced, oh, they're making a La Llorona, it's going to be part of the Conjuring universe. And then I contacted the producers, I'm like, did you guys know about this? Are we done? Are we not going to do it anymore? And they're like, no, keep going. So it's been in the can for a while. They've run into issues, you know, post-production, small budget movie, that happens. But finally it's out. We got picked up by Saban Films, which is great. They're the people behind Power Rangers. Now they're distributing horror movies, you know, cool. whatever works. They put us in theaters, which is great, which is incredibly difficult, especially now during COVID. Well, actually, it might be easier now because there's not that many movies in theaters. But we got that. Now we are VOD, like you mentioned, Vudu, Prime, Apple TV, you know, wherever you can rent digital movies, it's on there. And hopefully, because we all love physical media here, we're going to get a DVD or a Blu-ray. I haven't heard anything. I keep asking. So as soon as I know, I'll post on my channel or something. Hey, it's coming out. And then hopefully I'll be a part of the special features if we get a chance to do that. But,
commentary or something like that.
Right, cool. Right. It was fun. You know, it took 4 or 5 years to get out there. But, you know, like anything, it's difficult with the movie. And I knew I wanted to make movies my whole life. And that's what led me to L.A. You know, I made two films out there in Miami. Didn't really break through for me. So I decided to move out to L.A. After I got married. And I said, OK, before we have kids, let's settle out here. And really make a go of it. And, you know, it's been a struggle. I've been able to make 5 films, directed, and then written 12 movies. So better than some people, but not to the level that I wanted to be at. And it's just kind of the reality of the industry. It is a grind. It's who you know. It's luck of the draw. It's, you know, all those catchphrases you hear is 100% true. You know, I sort of fell in with the asylum, and I've been in that niche. I haven't been able to break out of it, you know, despite a couple of really amazing close calls. I actually have something pretty amazing pending that's, again, been in the works for 10, 12 years. I don't know if it'll happen, but it'd be pretty great if it'll happen. But I'm actually back with Asylum now, working on a couple of other things because I took a break. I was hoping to, you know, get into TV, but the whole TV thing is a whole other hurdle. It's tricky. It's as they say, it's hard out here for a pimp.
The Asylum, though, is one of those companies that we loved. I mean, we kind of championed that. I don't know, you know, what it is about it exactly. It's just the idea of those kind of, you know, films that kind of mock all that. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't release as much stuff as they used to, though. I mean, we're talking about like almost like Vinegar Syndrome. Each month they would have like a collection of stuff that would be out. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you can get in with a company like the Asylum, that definitely their stuff gets out there for sure.
Yeah, the stuff gets out there. I will say now, actually, apparently last year they released 30 movies. You wouldn't know that.
Jesus.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that unless you had Tubi, because everything's going to Tubi.
Oh, okay.
You know, everything's the market has changed. You know, there's no Blockbuster. There's no room in Redbox. You know, Netflix isn't going to touch them. So it's now their market has changed, and it's all, I guess, Tubi is the place. That's what they're all aiming for right now. So they made 30 movies last year during the pandemic, which is insane. You know, I'm not going to speak to the quality of those movies. I'm not necessarily going to go. No, I'm not going to go right. Watch them myself, but, you know, they are what they are. They made movies, you could say that.
I just love the idea of a company like that exists to just kind of, you know, like if your movie was Alien, theirs was like Star Killer or something, you know what I mean? Like it just rips off the title and kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Immediately when it comes
out.
I'm
glad that I finally know the proper way to pronounce La Llorona. Is that correct? La Llorona?
You got to work on it. It's La Llorona. Like, yo.
La Llorona.
There you go. There you go.
Jesus.
La Llorona. The Legend of Lila Rona.
Eastern Kentucky Spanish. That's what he's trying to do. Right? Don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, because like I was almost singing the end of Moni Moni or whatever when I was when the James Wan one came out. I was like La Rona Rona Rona. So, let's talk about some boutique Blu-rays because I know that that's kind of your thing.
Yeah,
you're one of the only people I know that renewed their subscription for Vinegar Syndrome this year, and you're already going deep into the reviews already. Have you watched any of, was it Master of the World, I think? Was that the name of it? Conqueror of the World or Master of the World?
Master of the World is actually, well, as of the recording of this show with you guys, it's going to be tomorrow's episode. I'll tell you what I thought. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it's also the most fucking tedious thing I've ever seen in my life. No dialogue, just people in loincloths grunting and hitting each other with sticks for nearly 2 hours. I don't know what the hell they were thinking releasing that movie. Honestly, but at the same time, it's not terrible. It's actually a good looking movie. The actors are actually good.
Wasn't there like a mainstream movie like that at one time, Link or something like that, where like there's really no dialogue and it was just kind of like Neanderthals,
yeah,
kind of wandering around, yeah.
Yeah, the quest—it's definitely a ripoff of Quest for Fire and Clan of the Cave Bear, stuff like that. But yeah. Like, you know, those had like big name actors. This is some Italian dudes.
Yeah. This is.
Well, there's a clip of like the first 10 minutes on YouTube, and I watched a little bit of it, and it's almost. I mean, it's one of the strangest things that I've seen recently. I'll just say that.
Yeah, it's. It's weird. That's going to be a slow seller. I mean, I have this theory on my channel where Vinegar Syndrome will put a bare ass on the back as sort of a hint that the movie sucks. This movie, if you look at the back of the slip cover, if you look closely, you will see bare ass and a little bit of vagina flap in there. It's in there. You just got to look real close. You got to look. And I spent hours poring over this, you know, investigating it with a magnifying glass. It's there. So
I don't know how you feel, but I honestly feel like that Vinegar Syndrome, despite like, you know, some of these movies that they're putting out, like they really did take the whole physical media genre in a whole different direction, like to where it was, you know, Scream Factory maybe or somebody like that was a little bit more mainstream. I really feel like Vinegar Syndrome was just like, we don't give a shit if you've never heard of these movies. Like, we're going to make them like just insane packaging, special features, like, and the people that, you know, are into this kind of thing will buy them. And so far, that's definitely been true. Like, I mean, collectors and things like that go crazy over the stuff that they put out.
Absolutely. Oh, packaging alone, I think that's why most people love them. You know, the slipcovers and all the stuff and the boxes and everything. That's 100% what got them their infamy. But honestly, prices are going to rise, and people are going to start realizing these movies are crap. And
yeah, I'm surprised they haven't already. Really, like,
I mean, it seems like they are. Even like the most hardcore on the Facebook groups. I don't know if you're on there and checking those out, the Vinegar Syndrome collectors. But it's almost like I don't know if they buy these films in lots. And we'll just release anything. It honestly seems that way with quite a few of them. Mm. And what's interesting, and we always joke about this on the show too, you know, just these random movies that'll pop up, like, I don't know, let's just say Annie Lee's Meat Pies, right? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, that's everyone's favorite movie on one of those groups.
Yes. I was like, I've been waiting 20 years.
That's a wonderful movie. Meat Pies.
And like, you're right, yeah.
You know, I think we grew up around the same time frame, you know, in the 80s and early 90s. I never, ever recall seeing Annie Lee's Meat Pies in a video store.
Shit. No.
Just as an example.
Absolutely. Almost every movie, oh, I can't believe it. Master of the World, this, I've been waiting 30 years to see this restored on Blu-ray. No, you haven't. Nobody has. This movie doesn't even exist until right now. Don't give me that crap. So I 100% agree with you on that. But I think that's part of the fandom. I think people just kind of want to hype themselves up to I don't know. Like they want to trick themselves into liking it, and I think that happens quite a bit.
Well, people always want, especially like collectors, they always want to say that they know something more than some other collector. So, you know, if you can say, oh, I've been championing this film that nobody has clearly heard of, then it kind of makes you look, you know, like you're a little bit bigger in the hierarchy than maybe you are. And people do that crap constantly. Like, they'll champion movies and things like that that you know that they have no idea what they are. They still do that to this day.
Yeah.
Like, with the stuff, especially Severin. Jesus H. Christ. Like, I love, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I bought $300 worth of shit from Severin, like,
and he does enjoy
a month ago.
Playing yeah. with his dick demon on a nightly basis, I've heard.
Yeah, the dick, yes, the dick demon is amazing. But yeah, that being said, like, you know,
oh, we're going to compare sizes of dick demons.
I had to get them.
What we always say too is like, I don't, because they got some more back in stock. Did David Gregor and his mom go to like Pottery Barn and finish up a few more of them, or what was the deal with that? I thought they were sold out initially.
But like Severin is one of those companies, man, where it like it even goes further than Vinegar Syndrome, I think, in terms of just the obscurity. They got Italian Caligula and shit on there right now. I'm like, whoever even knew that any of this stuff like existed?
Yeah, the stuff that they dig out of the, you know, out of the forgotten graveyards of cinema history is kind of amazing. And sometimes you find a couple of really hidden gems. Last year, I'll say Shallow Grave was amazing from Vinegar Syndrome. I thought that was a fantastic film, you know, and then you get garbage like Dark Tower, which was just atrociously bad. You know, it's kind of a crapshoot, but with movies, that's what happens. So I don't know if I necessarily blame the companies, but I do feel there should be a little more quality control. Like they should probably watch these things first and say, no, this sucks. Let's not bother.
Was it difficult? Difficult for you to renew that subscription, or were you kind of like, yeah, I've got to, because you make some of your money back, right? You sell some of the stuff that you'll never watch again.
That's the only way I was able to, first of all, convince the wife to let me, you know, let me drop, you know, $800 something on surprise movies. So last year was rough, but I was able to find folks who wanted it at a discount. I basically sold it to them at what I got it, you know, my whatever my half off discount price would be. And so I was able to pay off most of it and maybe have the whole year for like $100 something. So that was pretty good. So it's kind of a no brainer. And honestly, it's the content that does the best on my channel. If I do Severin, it does okay. If I do Vinegar Syndrome, usually it gets quite a lot of eyeballs. So
I think that
no brainer.
That's just the company right now in terms of for like cult collectors and things like that. Like their stuff immediately sells out within like seconds now, and it goes on eBay for hundreds of dollars, a lot of that stuff. So I mean, for whatever reason, they just became the it company. And I think Severin has done a lot of work to kind of catch up with them. They're not really there, but they're trying like desperately to get right now.
Well,
they're like Severin, little sister or whatever of the Vinegar Syndrome.
Severin has a lot of, I love the Severin guys. I know the Severin guys, you know, they, unfortunately they've got a lot of bad press because of the, their shipping issues and things like that, you know, and a lot of their old slips being like glued on to the M-Ray cases.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I think that they have to do a lot when it comes to bridging the gap with the consumer, and I think they'll be on equal footing. But their movie selection is also pretty weird too.
Yeah, it's all over the place for sure. Yeah. Their slipcovers though, they're starting. I guess the last batch of them was more like the Vinegar Syndrome slipcovers instead of cereal box ones.
Yes. Yeah. Luckily, and I hope that sticks. But we'll see. But then prices will raise. Here's a question for you guys. What do you think is going to be the breaking point when it comes to boutique Blu-rays? Because I think once prices go up, I mean, Vinegar Syndrome's prices raised last year, the beginning of the year. I think by the end of this year, we're going to see $30, you know, standalone titles. We're at 28 right now, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be 30 bucks. There's already people complaining about partner labels being way too expensive for what they are. Do you think there's going to come a time when people are just going to say, no, forget it. It's too expensive. I'm just going to wait for a sale or just not even bother.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of people that have asked on the show, like, you know, how long do you think physical media just in general has before it goes under? And I really think that like this wave or whatever that Vinegar Syndrome and all these companies are going through is very similar to anything else, like comic books or basketball cards or anything, like anything people collect. Like eventually what happens is people are like, oh, okay, this shit ain't worth nothing. It's, you know, like it comes to a realization in their brain where they're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like you have an epiphany where you're like, I'm just collecting a bunch of garbage. And like, I really do feel like that's going to happen with people, and it's going to be the same type of thing. And especially if they keep fucking like pushing it, like you're talking about, if they keep like raising the prices on this stuff and people are paying $30, $35 for, you know, just junk a lot of times, especially with those partner releases and things like that, then I think people will just, they'll get burnt out and it'll slowly kind of die out.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it is these are limited editions. A lot of them are under, what, 3,000?
Well, now they're raising them. Now,
I was getting ready to say,
it may be like 6,000 to 10,000 sometimes.
Okay. I mean, I think they need to be careful. I don't know if they can have another year like they had last year, because it seemed like a lot of the stuff they released, they were just coasting there. You know, there wasn't anything, the big unveil was Six String Samurai, and that went over like a fart in church, pretty much. I mean, I was like, what?
Yeah, that's true. That pretty much killed VSU for me. Like, okay, they release Ticks, and they release Dead Heat, two perfect movies that could have been VSUs, just regular standard, you know, slipcase. What the hell? Those could have been big box editions.
And then the New York Ninja, which is a Blu-ray, has the VSU box.
Yeah, it's a mess. It's a complete mess.
But I definitely wanted to mention your YouTube page and get people to check this out, because what you do is a service to the fans. The way I look at it. And I check out, because honestly, your reviews that I've watched of movies that I've seen are dead on with, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say 100%, but it's pretty close. So, you know, if you put it over and all that, more than likely I'll check it out. And if you say it's a, you know, piece of shit or whatever you say, then that's one that I'll steer clear from.
I appreciate that. I try to approach, you know, as a filmmaker, I don't approach a movie with kid gloves, just because I know filmmaking is hard, but I approach it as a film fan. I watch it from the perspective of a filmmaker, so I look for things that some people don't normally look for, like story or, you know, the way characters interact or the way an actor processes a scene and things like that. So I try to give as balanced a review as possible, but you know, my obviously movies are subjective, but I do my best to explain why I think a certain way and why I think the movie didn't work or worked completely for me. So I appreciate that you like that. Thank you, sir.
Well, I appreciate the honesty. I mean, the worst thing to me is a reviewer that loves everything.
Oh yeah.
Like, and I know you've seen them. I just won't watch them. I really won't. Because, I mean, come on. I mean, there are some great movies out there for sure, but they're all not great.
The worst thing to ever happen to movie reviews is screeners. When people started to get screeners and they were like, oh, God, everything was killer all of a sudden. Like, because they were scared to death to say anything about any of the movies. And you saw that happen, like, constantly. And it's still, I don't know. I don't think, does Vinegar Syndrome do screeners? I don't think they do.
They used to. I know. I actually know somebody. I'm not gonna name names, but I do know somebody that you guys know that does get screeners, and he's very easy on them. but he gets screeners, but they don't send slipcovers. They just send the cases out, which is, you know, I don't think he really cares. But I get screeners every once in a while. I get Arrow screeners and things like that. But one thing I promised on my channel, I go, look, I'm going to be 100% honest with you guys. I will never BS you. That's that. 100%, I hate that. I hate when I tune in and somebody's like, oh, man, look at these great special features. Trailer? Oh, my God. Photo gallery? You guys got to get this. You know? You know, so I'm 100% honest. And if it causes me to not have screeners, then whatever, I'll miss out. But so far, I haven't had that issue. And to the credit of the companies that send me screeners, they never ask for a pass. They just send me the movies. They don't actually even ask me to send them the review. They just either assume I do it or don't do it. sometimes I don't have time for it. But honesty is one thing, 100%. I you can count on from me whether I like it or not. And while it's not maybe made me any friends with the distributors or the companies, it's I think that, like you said, the audience understands. The audience can tell that whether we agree or not, I'm not trying to shill for anybody.
Yeah, and there's plenty of content, reviews. You have them almost every day, right? Or maybe it is every day.
I was daily for the first year, and then I had barely any time to keep up with it. So I'm almost daily, but I take off days here and there.
So, I mean, it's almost like a full-time job, your YouTube page is, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Full-time job. And then now that stuff's ramping up again with screenwriting, I'm going to have to sort of take a backseat with it. But there will always be at least 3 videos a week. That's sort of my low-end goal, regardless. I mean, if I run out of stuff, I run out of stuff. But so far, I've been busy this month. I've been covering – did you guys get the folk horror box set? I've been going through that.
No. It's one that I didn't get. Like, I spent $300 on other shit, so I was like, I don't have the money.
I'm surprised he didn't get it, yeah. Uncle Bill kind of goes crazy with some of these sales and stuff.
I did, however, almost watch the entire documentary. It's on Shudder. What was the name of it?
The Woodland Park?
Yes, which was great. Like, I was really, really surprised. Like, I was like, okay, I don't know anything about this, but, like, I mean, sometimes somebody will make a great documentary just out of left field that you – and that was definitely one of them. Like, I mean, that was really well put together.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. The box set is good, by the way. I do recommend it, but I wait for a sale. You know, there's no hurry. They're not going to run out. Although they'll say, oh, limited, but somehow they always end up finding some.
They'll have
stuff that's exclusive for Black Friday or whatever, and then it'll just randomly pop back up a couple months later.
I always think it's funny how they do that, too. They're like, we went over to one of our producer's house, and we found a carton of this Blu-rays that we didn't know we had. It's like, really?
The best thing to do for Savorn Films, though, is they have sales at conventions. If you know anybody, if you're going to a convention, it's usually like 3 movies for $50 or something like that.
Yeah.
So you can get a good deal that way as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there any titles? There haven't been a whole lot that's been announced, but anything in 2022 that you're looking forward to?
Well, it's funny. You know, the one thing that I'm very curious about, and I'm hoping it'll blow up into some drama because then we'll have content for our channels, is the whole, are you guys aware of the whole Thriller debacle that's happening between... Synapse and Vinegar Syndrome. Do you guys know anything about that? Because that to me seems like the most interesting thing going on right now.
So go ahead. You go ahead.
I don't know the specific details. I know that I can't remember the director's name. The Venice or Vibinius or something like that.
Swedish or Finnish or something like that. Yeah.
Don May Jr. and him, or he basically doesn't get along with Don May Jr. for whatever reason. There's some sort of fallout there. I think Synapse believes they still own the rights in the United States. Vinegar Syndrome thinks they own it because Vibinius, or whatever the hell his name is, you know, he's working with Vinegar Syndrome. I think Vinegar Syndrome might end up having a better transfer. It's going to be in 4K, right. But I think Don told me it was the same transfer they used for the DVD is what the Blu-ray is going to be.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my guess, just by talking to him, because he never said anything about it, like, really. Don May never said anything about it one way or the other.
Not publicly.
Which I don't
even know if he wants me mentioning this, but...
Well, it's in the interview that we did with him, and one of them, he talks about the fact that they put that out, and the director was kind of kooky, and that's his, you know, kind of words, and he said that he really believed that was going to be, like, his Citizen Kane or whatever, and, like, people were going to buy, you know, millions of copies of it, and it was going to make him, like, what... And when that didn't happen, he got super pissed at Don May... And, like, they never got along after that. Now, fast forward to all this crap. I'm betting that director gave Vinegar Syndrome or said he was going to give Vinegar Syndrome or led them to believe that he was giving them, like, you know, sole rights to do this because he was still pissed off at Dominic. Now, he may not have the ability to do that, but that's just my guess that that's what happened.
I don't think the Vinegar Syndrome one's going to be out until maybe the fall, though, so I don't know. I mean, it's I'm kind of confused by it all still anyway. I mean, you would think there'd be some sort of legal remedy that would, you know, fix one of them, but
we'll yeah, see. I'm curious to see how that goes down. I've got to check the calendar of releases, but I could swear it's a halfway to Black Friday release. The Vinegar Syndrome version. So I don't know. I'm curious how that's all going to go down because I find that so interesting that two companies, two fairly well established companies, are having this double release. That's very curious to me.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many people are going to buy Synapse over Vinegar Syndrome. I would imagine most people are going to buy Vinegar Syndrome because it's got the 4K.
And it'll have the packaging and all that.
Yeah.
Right. And then the whole thing still up in the air about Drop Dead Fred. You know, Severin had it, and then something happened, and now...
Oh, God.
You know.
Yeah. Major motion picture company, I heard. Trick or Treat evidently is coming out this year too. That's what I've heard. They haven't made any official announcements, but word on the street is that one's going to be out sometime this year. So that'll be good.
That's great. I know Vinegar Syndrome made a huge push. At least they were making a big deal of it during Black Friday about this is going to be the year of 4K. We're having the most 4Ks ever. And now they kicked off with Dead Heat, which I think it's a fantastic movie. So if you're kicking off the year with Dead Heat, that means the next ones are going to be better than Dead Heat because you can't start off at the top and then start releasing, you know, Munchies on 4K or something. You know what I mean?
That would be awesome. But, like, no, you're right. And I'd say they probably – the thing about Vinegar Syndrome, those 4Ks are – God, those are expensive. Like, yes. Of any company, Jesus Christ, like
– They haven't 4Ks. Made any hints or anything about the February titles at all yet, have they?
No, it's three titles. One of them is, they said one of them is a universal films cult classic or something like that. So it's, well, I guess we'll find out in like a week or so, but
Drop Dead Fred.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it could possibly be, but why would they steal it from Severin? They're friends. You know, I don't understand why they would have that.
Somebody brought this up a long time ago too. Right when that happened, I don't know if it was Garrett or somebody else, but it was like, you know, what if they let, like, one of their friends just kind of take it over because they're in hot water with all that other shit, and they just kind of give them the thing, and they're like, hey, put this out. I mean, they say they could do that.
Yeah.
Like another company or something. But it's hard to say.
Not that I'm dying to see Drop Dead Fred, but, you know, when it was announced, it was another one of those movies, like, oh, my God, I love Drop Dead Fred. I can't wait to see it again, you know?
Another couple of titles, though, that's coming out overseas, Second Sight Films, they're working on. I don't know if Martin's going to be out. It's probably going to be delayed until next year at this point because of the new cut. But The Hitcher, I'm so excited about that one coming to 4K.
Excellent film. Yeah, that's 100% going to be a big seller, and it's probably going to sell just as fast as Dawn of the Dead sold for them. So, that's going to be a good one. Martin isn't a movie that I love, but I would revisit it. But I don't know that I would spend $60 to revisit the, you know, revisit it, especially not a longer version of it. I think
a three-hour cut. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. What do you guys think about Romero in general? I like love Dawn of the Dead. You know, Night of the Living Dead is amazing.
Yeah.
Day is a movie that grew on me. But that's kind of where it ends for me. You know, I like Monkey Shines. Dark Half is really good. But then after that, I'm just not a, huge, like his later stuff, I'm not a big fan of. I don't really like his early stuff either. I don't know.
There was a set that came out from Arrow, I think, that was like Between Night and Dawn. And there's like three films on there, I think. Holy shit. Like, I tried to watch those. Like, Season of the Witch is one of the most god-awful things I've ever tried to watch. Like, if you enjoy just, like, middle-aged women sitting around talking for 2 hours, that's the film for you right there, let me tell you. But, and then there's always Vanilla is another one where I was just like, oh, what is he doing? So, pretty much everything, like, he did Night. Everything in between that is except for The Crazies, which is not a good movie, but you know, it's got a lot of
cool stuff.
It's not a well-made movie, I'll put it that way, but it's got like a great story and like good parts to it. Then you go to Dawn, and then like there's some horrible stuff in between, you know, Dawn and Day and stuff too. So yeah, he's real hit and miss, like with the stuff that he did.
Knight Riders is pretty decent. I mean, I don't love it, but you know, the music in it and all that. Tom Savini, his character, and it's interesting.
Yeah, Knight Riders is one I have to revisit, but my initial impression was not a favorable one. But I think it's probably just something that I wasn't in the mood for. I'm not a big biker guy, so you know, I don't normally like those type of movies.
I don't know what he was doing, but like there for a while, it almost seemed like he had no idea, like, or maybe he didn't even give a damn about genres or anything like that, because those movies kind of defy any kind of, like, Season of the Witch, There's Always Vanilla, and especially Knight Riders, like, that's not really a genre per se, you know, it's just, but he had a really, really bad habit of not editing a movie enough, like, where it went on way too long, and, like, some of the scenes were just completely pointless, and you even see that in, like, you know, some of the bigger films that he did, like Dawn of the Dead, and stuff, which I think is, like, it's my favorite film, but still, there's some of those scenes that went on far too long too in that movie. So I mean, he's really hit and miss. Yeah, and but nobody's more hit and miss than Toby Hooper, though. God.
It was his birthday today.
I know, that's why I brought that up. Yeah.
Oh, happy birthday, Toby. Rest in peace, man.
One guy we never got to meet or interview was Toby Hooper.
Yeah. Sadly,
Toby Hooper and Wes Craven were the two big ones that we never got to speak with or anything. We come close with Wes Craven, but just didn't work out. But you mentioned you've got Master of the World Review coming up. Anything else coming up on your channel you want to?
Sure, Master of the World. I'm doing Curfew, which, by the way, fantastic, fucking great. Curfew is an early thumbs up, 5-star movie from Vinegar Syndrome. Really good movie. So I recommend that one. And then I'm doing the Forgotten Gialli box set volume 4, which I'm not looking forward to. I haven't really been a big fan of those, but
Steve is.
Yeah, our buddy Steve loves like anything from Italy. Anything.
Oh, good. So whatever. Fingers crossed it'll be fine. And then I'm going to continue going through the folk horror box set and the Shaw Brothers box set, and I'm breaking down every disc and talking about the features and all that.
The Ebola Syndrome, did have you got that review up? I can't remember.
I do.
I haven't checked that one. I'm interested in seeing what you thought about that one.
It's, I've seen it twice. Once before it was even announced, and then when the 4K came out. It's an interesting film. It's definitely, I was expecting a lot worse, and it wasn't actually as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's still a pretty nasty movie, but... I don't think I ever want to see it a third time. You know, if I, you know, I think you. I'm good. I think I'm good on that one.
Yeah, 4K release of something like that is just what the hell.
Here's the thing. I think one of the problems, and again, I think it's going to be one of the downfalls, is their inconsistency in terms of how they package stuff. I mean, we sort of touched on that a little bit, but like I don't have it here with me, but. Dead Heat is just a slipcover. Ticks came out last year, and that had a slipcover and a slip box. So what makes Ticks special, you know, compared to Dead Heat? Why didn't Dead Heat get a slip box? Why did New York Ninja get a VSU box? There's even their VSP line, their new thing, or their new movies, the packaging is all over the place. You know, New York Ninja has the VSU box. But the next two movies are slipcase boxes. So like, what's going on? Like, why is it so inconsistent? I think that's going to be, first of all, for the collectors, it's going to be a hassle because you're trying to have to figure out how to arrange that on your shelf, and I think that's going to piss a lot of people off.
I think all those lines and labels and all that's just so confusing anyway. I mean, it really is. They have too many. How many sister labels are there at this point? I've
close
lost
to
count.
20, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's what, and then, and they're all almost, I wouldn't say they're all releasing junk, but they're all, I mean, yeah, they all feel like this indie crap that I wouldn't pay $15 for. And now you want me to pay $30 for it, you know?
Well, it's the kind of shit that they used to like send us for screeners, like SRS Cinema and fucking, I mean, some of those independent labels that just, the movies are just god awful, you know? And you, like you said, you're not going to pay 30, like how, it's almost like fraud. Like they put this stuff up on the Vinegar Syndrome site and just by proxy, people think they need to buy it. And it's, I can't imagine some of these people's reactions when they watch these movies. Because they're not like high quality movies, and even for Vinegar Syndrome, they're not high quality movies.
No, no, like all the Wave Production movies that they're putting out. Man, I got two of those. I'm like, this is, first of all, this movie looks like there should be wall to wall titties, and there's nothing. What's going on? It's like my grandma made this movie. Not interested in that. You know, it just seems like it's so disappointing. And then, like, I will say one partner label blew me away last year, and I discovered my favorite movie I've ever purchased from Vinegar Syndrome. That movie's called Adoration. 100% recommend that movie. Really great. I mean, that's like Criterion-level stuff. Really amazing. But most of the stuff coming out of there is pretty god-awful and should be avoided at all costs. I mean, especially at those high prices.
Yes.
Which is... You know, hopefully gonna give them a hint that they should stop with the partner labels and maybe focus on, you know, quality, I think, over quantity.
Yeah, I mean, I give you a perfect example of that, too, is that Tim Ritter movie that just came out, too.
Killing Spree.
Man, okay. Like, that movie was shot on video. It looks like something that I could make right now in this house. Like, that's... It's just the type of movie that it is. It's like, and they put the, like the, I got to give them credit. Like the marketing for that and everything was amazing. Cause it looks like the most badass slasher film ever. You watch that and you're just like, wow, they spent a total of like $200 on this movie. I guarantee it. Like from start to finish. Yeah.
I watched that back in the day, you know, when all that stuff was sort of newish. I got a bootleg of it, and it's been such a long time ago. Let me revisit it. I don't know if I need the Blu-ray, but it's on YouTube. So I said, let me just scan through it and refresh myself. Man, 20 minutes in, I'm like, no, hell no.
But there's a lot of movies that look like that coming out from those partner labels. Like that seems to be the niche that they have
on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yep.
It doesn't help it.
No. But
Man, you know what I'm saying? My favorite label that's doing really good restorations is 88 Films. Their stuff looks amazing. Like their Jackie Chan films. Oh my God. It looked like they were shot today. It's amazing. Hmm. Like they're really doing an amazing job with those movies.
I think I only have the Gestapo's Last Orgy. That's the only 88 Films release that I have, and that was
he would have that too.
That was interesting. That movie was,
man, that movie, that, I mean, that movie was fucked. I got that as a screen, and I'm like, I can't review this. This is like despicable. So I just kind of like I gave it to a friend.
Yes, yeah, like, if he would review it for you.
Didn't you like that, by the way?
I did enjoy it.
He's like, oh, this is killing.
I'm like, well.
Well,
oh. Oh God!
But
I mean,
man, I appreciate you joining us on here for sure, and it's good to find that we finally kind of, you know, got to do this.
Yes,
and yeah, definitely. Like I said, I keep up with your videos. Usually not the live streams, but I'll go back and watch them. You know, the archive version. So
thanks, man.
You do a great job with all that stuff and keep it going for sure.
I appreciate that very much. I'm at it. And then once I get the movies going, I'll be able to take folks for set tours and fun things like that. And, you know, kind of broaden the channel a little bit because right now I'm stuck at home because with everything going on, it's safer to be at home than watching movies. You know, it's safer.
Ain't that the truth? Fucking Scream 5. I'm still hacking up. Yeah, I'm still hacking up shit because I went to see Scream 5.
Yeah,
oh no.
He's using that as another, you know, reason to hate Scream 5, I guess.
That's true. If I didn't really need another reason, but that was another one.
Well, you know what? Real quick, I have not seen your reviews, but what did you guys think of the movie? I'm guessing you're not big fans of it.
I wasn't. I think that CK liked it a lot more than I did.
My expectations were just so low. I go into every movie like that, though, especially ones like in the theater. I just have crazy low expectations. But, you know, I mean, I liked it better than Scream 4.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think Scream 4 is my favorite sequel. And, really? And maybe one day we can get together and talk to Scream franchise. I'm a big Scream guy. I love okay. it. I just did a whole week of coverage on Ghostface. I love the franchise very much, and while I appreciated certain things of the new one, I also really hated a lot of the new one.
Thank God.
Yeah, I understand what they were trying to do, but they got a lot of things wrong, what's pissing me off is a lot of like these newbie millennial kids coming on and saying that they're Scream fans and saying this is the best one. You know, since the original, somebody was saying it's better than the original, which is like, you're an idiot. There's no way you're a Scream fan.
That's the thing. We had a lot of people on that chat when we did the review that were like, oh, here's how I rank them. And they were like 5-1. And I'm like, what? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No. And
a lot of people defended that movie, but I totally missed whatever it was about that movie that people liked. Like, I just, it completely went over my head, because really what I saw was just kind of pointless, directionless, violent. And I think that might have been just because of like the Halloween franchise. They were like, okay, so this is what made money. Let's just pump this shit full of like as much, you know, violence as we can. And there's some people that it doesn't matter what you show them. If you put, like, if it's really, really violent, like, they're going to love it. They're going to, you know, hype it up to whoever. But a lot of that shit, you know, I can't even go into because there's spoilers and stuff, but it just made me like just angry more than anything. I mean, just a lot of pointless stuff in that movie.
Well, and they're wanting to start a new trilogy is what I'm guessing. But how do you do that? I mean, it's a different, like, I don't know. It's just the unveil each time. It's like, and it's been like that to me since probably the second movie, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like the killer's unveil, I'm just, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean there's a lot wrong with it. There's a lot that goes in weird directions, and honestly, up until 4, we were good. I feel like we were pretty consistent in terms of like telling a story. Now we're in Friday the 13th territory. Now this is literally a new beginning. We don't necessarily have the same ingredients, but we have officially divided the franchise and the fandom with this. And then everybody's saying, oh, let's follow Sam's character. No, fuck that. Sidney Prescott is the main character. You've established that for 4 movies. You cannot change the rules now. That's not how a franchise works. You know, it's not like Friday the 13th, where as long as Jason's in it, it doesn't matter. You know, it's so divided now that I don't even know going forward what's going to happen. And I'm guessing if they make a part 6, that's when we're going to find out where the real fans are for this movie and where the franchise lies. Because if it's not about Sidney Prescott, it's the same stuff. I have a feeling that the franchise is going to be dormant after 6. But we'll see.
Are they going to call it 6 or are they going to call it 2?
You know what? Nobody knows yet. Somebody on Twitter had a really good idea. They should call it Screams, like aliens. I kind of like that.
That's what I was thinking. Like they could have done with this last movie is stylize the S into a 5, maybe.
Yeah, they should have. Yep. Now it's just all fucked up.
Or they could have 5 Cream. It was my favorite when they go with that.
But I never really thought about it like that, but you're right. Like, and I that's what I was saying in the review that we did too. I was like, it doesn't feel like a Scream movie, but that helps explain why, because those first 4 movies kind of had like a coherent feel and atmosphere and storyline. And then this one is just, it's like they just did away with any of the stuff that made me really like those other movies. Basically, they did away with all of it. And we're just kind of like, you know, this is the new hipster Scream movie where, like, okay.
Yeah. It wasn't made for us, apparently, which is a shame, because I feel like if, honestly, if Wes were behind it, like, well, no spoilers, but certain decisions would not have been made, you know, when it comes to certain characters, and I 100% Wes would know. You can't have a movie where Sydney's not the main character, you know. It's just it's like fan fiction, and even one of the characters says it. I'm in fan fiction. You're 100% in fan fiction, because this is not a real Scream movie. But that's a tangent for another episode.
Oh yeah,
that could go on for days. It really could.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we appreciate you taking the time out for sure. And I know we've kept you on here a little bit longer than what I said, but we will have to get together again for sure. It's been fun.
Oh, man, let's do it. Let's do it. I've been wanting to chat with you guys for a while. So this is really, really great. And I love what you guys do. And, you know, it's – I mean, honestly, as a filmmaker, you guys are the people that make this fun, you know, the fans that really care – that surround yourselves with horror, with posters, with, you know, with movies and things like that. That shows that the stuff that people do, creative people do honestly, this is my office, but like in a little room like this, sitting by myself, typing on a digital white piece of paper, can eventually become something that inspires somebody, that fills somebody with love and joy enough that they want that in their house, you know, posters and the movies and the toys. So I love that. I love that fandom hasn't died. It's gotten more expensive, for sure. Yeah, Remember when T-shirts were $10?
Yeah, I do. Sadly enough, but yeah.
Man, but no, I love that you guys are keeping the fandom alive and you know, hyping up the community and just being real. I think that's important. Like we said, there's enough fake people out there, and honesty and kindness and embracing of all arts, I think is very important. So really happy to have been a part of Dead Pit today with you guys.